it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the Pompey Pubcast that combines the beers and the blues.
Barros for Pompey, round Kuchak goes down, penalty to Portsmouth and Old Trafford. Barros tripped by Thomas Kuchak, who sent off Montari do the job. He steps up, left footed, scores for Pompey. They lead at Old Trafford in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup.
Jamal Lowe's onside, the flag stayed down. Jamal Lowe, nonchalant, fantastic, brilliant. Portsmouth Football Club are promoted to League One.
Curtis across the face, a goal. Marquez! He's won it! 96 minutes on the clock! Parker with a heading back to Wembley!
This is Three Lads in the Pub.
Welcome along to another edition of Three Lads in the Pub. We're on Season 2, Episode 9, and we are at the Rose in June this evening on the Sunday. I have literally been back in the country for about 5 hours. I'm hanging out my arse, not going to lie. Good afternoon, Ryan.
Hello, Liam. Or hello, the shell of Liam.
And Jeff as well. How you doing?
Hello, mate.
Right, let's just get that out. Let's just get the bad bit out of the way. What have we gone for drinks-wise? You're going to rip into me.
I've gone for the Madry.
Jealous. Ryan?
I think I might have gone for my first Inches cider.
It's nice.
It's all right.
I like
Yeah. I've gone for a Diet Coke, so I've gone back to my roots.
You are sporting a hangover. Then it means at one point, many alcohol was partaken.
Yes, and all I could think of last night at the free bar in Malta was the lads would be proud of me of how many chests I'd have.
I mean, it looked fun, because I saw a series of photos throughout the day, and you became just gradually more dishevelled with each appearance.
It was one of those, this is my first pint, yeah. this is my last
drink.
Yeah, it was a heavy night, but have you ever been to Malta?
No,
they have a local beer called Chisk, and it's really nice. It's similar to Madry, actually.
Called what?
Chisk.
Oh, okay.
It's spelled C-I-S-K. I'm claiming talk, but it's very nice. And
they're all small over there, aren't they?
Maltese people. Yeah. Well, my mum's about 4 foot, so yeah, that is very true. They are very short tempered as well. Don't annoy me because I'm half Maltese. Right, let's talk about the football then. Again. I'll start with you, Jeff. Another decent week. Tuesday night, I watched the games, by the way. I kind of did watch the wedding at the back of the church. The football at the back of the church at the wedding. Like I say, I'm still pissed. Tuesday night, I mean, good result.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was a good result.
Going up against a team that just changed their manager.
Yeah, and we were expecting that new manager bounce up that for Burton. And for large parts, I thought we were okay against Burton. And then we got the first goal, and then obviously the second delightful touch by Bishop for the second. Bit fortuitous for the first goal being an own goal. But look, you've got to be in those positions to influence games. And whenever I'm coaching, I'm always saying you've got to drill that ball across the 6 yard box because you never know what happened. And it just so happens, Burton, we score a goal like that. Saturday we can see the goal that way. I thought for large spells against Burton, the experiment with Ogilvy on at right back. Now I text you guys on the Sunday, I think it was. I popped over there and watched the last 10 minutes of training, and I saw Ogilvy at right back, and I was like, really? And I couldn't see Rafferty anywhere. You could see Freeman and Jacobs were training on their own with one of the physios. And it was like, oh, that's clearly what he's going for. Against, and we'll talk about it in more detail in a minute, but against Ipswich, I thought we were unbalanced with Ogilvy at right back. I just thought we were just a bit weak in that area. Don't get me wrong, I love Conor Ogilvy, and he was one of those players, again, like Bishop, I wanted at the club, you know, last season, season before. But it just seemed to be a bit up against the better teams. I think we were found a bit wanting yesterday. But against Burton, look, they're bottom of the table for a reason. Against those teams to the, I would say, 11th down to 24th, you'll get away with Ogilvy at right back, or you'll get away with Rafferty playing left back. But against the top teams, I thought we were lucky to get away with it yesterday.
Yeah, going back to Tuesday, Ryan, obviously you were there.
I was there, yes.
You were there. I saw a lot of people say we didn't particularly play very well, but we still grinded out a result. And I mean, I just keep getting flashbacks of that. Well, that season we won the league, we didn't exactly play well, and we grinded out results. And I mean, we played well towards the end, obviously. But
the experience I had at Burton on Tuesday, and the way I'd sum it up is, if you were to take every Pompey game this season and take the general archetypes, personality traits, characteristics of a Pompey approach, if you had to amalgamate it into one game and then describe it down the phone to someone, Burton would be the result. It's a competent first 10 minutes. Then for the rest of the half, it's playing within yourself, playing a bit conservative. As a result, exposing yourself to a few risks because you're not really hitting the back end of the Burton back line. You're more hitting the opposition midfield bank instead. You're trying to play out from the back. One oddity of the Tuesday night game against Burton was that I thought when we exploded in the second half, like we always do, Ogilvy then instinctively got back into the, oh yeah, this is the same thing I do on the left flank, just on the right. And he became a bit more familiar with it. But in the first half, 20, 30 minutes in, we're trying to play out from the back to the right, where Ogilvy hasn't really yet settled in to the right back role in the blood of thunder of a League One game. And because he wasn't, you know, quite ready to shift from right foot to left foot, he wasn't quite in the right position to receive the ball, coupled with this refusal to go left to Robertson, we were giving the ball away at the back. You know, Griffith's distribution suffered, Morrison was playing hospital balls, Burton had a couple of great chances to punish us for this. And I think that's where the theme of we weren't great against Burton comes in. A, because we don't normally play at 100% in the first half anyway, so we're never likely to set the world alight. But B, we were more than usual playing ourselves into trouble because of Ogilvy being out of position, and because it took a little while for him to get into that rhythm, we would have to go back to Griffiths. His distribution was problematic. Morrison was... I like players to have an almost instinctive alarm clock in their head that when it goes off, you've got to get rid. And I think at points on Tuesday night, the players didn't turn their alarms on. And I was thinking, I could see a few yards away, you've got to go, got to go, got to go, get rid. And we dally on it. Having said that, again, describing a Pompey performance down the phone, while there were concerns at halftime, I stood on that terrace, not even a single inch of a slump in my shoulders. I knew what was going to happen second half. I knew we were going to come out with fury and rage, being exactly what we've been in most second halves, getting right on their back line, feeding it down the line to get Dale into green space at full speed, trying to pick off the fullbacks to get our players down to the byline. And of course, that's how goals one and two are scored. It's patient work for the first goal between Ogilvy and Packers. Right, we're just going to pass it between us until the fullback commits one way or the other.
And a lovely assist as well, by the way.
I think it was Oscar Woodley, his name was. Brilliant stuff off the towel.
Well done, Oscar.
They were patient. They waited the fullback to commit. Which one he commits to determines the other one getting the ball. It's a lovely ball, and like Jeff says, the defender has to do something, because if he doesn't do something, there's a Pompey player, or as Jeff mentioned, there'll be a Plymouth player waiting to tuck it in. And that's why the first goal works so well. The second one, again, it's just Dale poised. You can almost see him rocking back and forth going, go on, get me running into empty green area. Go on, let me have at that box. It's a great ball in, and it's just a lot. Bishop doesn't have to do a lot with that finish. He just angles his foot and lets the ball bounce off it into the corner.
Exactly.
It's such a sweeping little finish, yeah. So that's why, yeah, not great first half, Burton. But I wasn't worried. Half time, I knew what we would do. Burton, I thought they had some nice passages of passing first half. You can tell Dina Mamria coming in has had some effect there. But I can also see why they're likely to concede 4-5 a game. Because that second half, they were ripped open. Scarlett's offside goal is a travesty. Not offside, the foul that was supposedly foul. What soft-ass bullshit is that? That is,
game's
I've
gone.
Lost the bouncing ball challenge. I'm going down.
Yeah.
But not a single Burton player around him stopped. The keeper still came out.
If you watch the replay, when he puts it away, you see the Burton players sort of like trot back to the halfway line thinking, oh, we've conceded another goal.
Yeah.
And they're a bit surprised that the goal's been disallowed. So, yeah, just piss poor, in it. But plenty of positives. Ryan summed it up perfectly there. Plenty of positives to take from the game. Obviously, 3 points, Jeff. Found a way to win ugly again. And I think one of the biggest positives is Colby Bishop finally found his magic hat again, because we've been crying out for that for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, like we said the other week, he's playing in a deeper role when he's up there with Scarlett. He is being the link player. I think we saw it more against Plymouth yesterday, where those trademark touches, I'll call them, the ball comes in, he just seems to chest it down, or he controls it down, or he gets his head to it and puts it to another Pompey player. That he was back in that space again yesterday. When you see him, when you get him in those advanced roles, he will put the ball in the back of the net, no doubt about it. And going on to yesterday, I thought, looking at the first half, we should have been home and dry by half time. We should be 2-3 up in the first half. Owen Dell caused them so many problems down the right hand side yesterday.
It's you. Hold on. Someone brought that up on Twitter about someone clearing their throat or something, or phlegm. It's bloody you. I was trying to figure out who it was.
So, yeah. And like I said, in the first half, I just thought we were a bit unbalanced in the back four. I thought Clark Robson made some great overlapping runs from that left-back position. And I don't think Plymouth were expecting him to be that positive in going forward with his play. It's just frustrating. We know over the course of the season so far we've been a second half team, but it looked like we put everything out there in the first half, and in the second half, round about, look, up until the 75 minutes, Plymouth weren't in that game. Plymouth weren't in it, and they got a lifeline with Sean Maggot's own goal.
Which, by the way, can we just come on to that? Ease up, giving him shit for that. Come on.
No, look, you've got to go, as a defender, if you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't,
exactly,
in that position. 9 times out of 10, that goes into row Z of the flat end.
Exactly.
If there is someone to be, who can be picked up on for the Plymouth equaliser, it's probably Clark Robertson, because there's far too much time on that flank. He overcommits coming inside, which then completely opens up the flank to go down, to get into the green space, to pick us. I know by the time he puts the ball into the box, Robertson has arrived, but there's still not enough pressure on the ball itself. And Cowley said this in his interview as well, you know, we've allowed far too much space down the side. We've jumped in the middle when we shouldn't have jumped. We've left way too much in exposure there. Raggett is left high and dry to try and cover the mistakes of I would say three players. Robertson for jumping in, the centre midfield pairing, Morel and Pack, for because Plymouth had breezed through the middle before the ball came back outside. Well, if you're in a tight 4-4-2, there's no way that should be happening. No. I'll go back to the archetype of 4-4-2 in League One, Blackpool, a couple of years ago. Could you imagine Blackpool, the two times we played in that year, when they played 4-4-2? Could you imagine them ever giving that goal away? Not in the slightest.
And I think you can add Curtis into that. Curtis came on to add a bit. I said it to the people around me. We needed an injection of energy in that team. And I said, Curtis has got to come on at this point. I just think Curtis was so focused on going forwards that in that moment where the equaliser went in, he was too advanced to influence going back the opposite way towards his own goal.
Yeah.
And like I said, look, I've said it numerous times already. I just thought we looked unbalanced with Ogilvy at left back. Would I have thrown Swanson in there? Probably not. I think that game would have been too much for Swanson yesterday. So putting Ogilvy in there was the right decision. Did we pay for that decision? Yes, we did. As you just eloquently described there about being out of position on the left. If Ogilvy was out there, I don't think they get that time and space.
No.
I do not think they get that, and that ball does not come in. But someone private messaged me yesterday on Twitter and said, look, value your opinion. I thought, he's been drinking all day.
Stop sending yourself messages, Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff Burner.
And just asked me what I thought. I said, look, I haven't really analysed it, but this is my hot debrief type thing. And I said exactly the same thing yesterday. What I did also pinpoint, though, Josh Griffiths is getting a lot of flack. All right? Josh Griffiths is a good goalkeeper. And this is the only negative I will say about the coaching staff. Now, Joe Padono, the goalkeeping coach, has got a wealth of experience as a goalkeeping coach. Let's just make that clear. He's got a wealth of experience as a goalkeeping coach. Has he played at the highest levels in football? No. This is my personal opinion, and I'm not hanging the guy out to dry, because I've seen his coaching sessions and I've seen him take the warm-ups and everything else. But I just feel your goalkeeper is your most important position on that field. The primary aim of football is to defend your goal. If you can defend your goal, you're going to pick points up and you're going to win goals and score goals at the opposite end of the field. In those 1v1 situations, you've got a highly talented under-21 England international. I just feel he needs someone who's played and been in those 1v1 situations and can give the benefit of their experience and go, I've been in that situation. This is how I help you with your decision-making. Now, anyone who's played in goal has been in a 1v1 situation. They have. What they haven't been in is a 1v1 situation in front of 19,000 fans or 25,000 fans at Ipswich or whatever, where the pressure is totally different. You make the slightest mistake, it ends up in a goal. In the second goal, 1v1 situation, we then saw it, and Plymouth should have been game over, 3-1. Ogilvy gets back.
It's a huge moment.
Ogilvy does not give up. Does not give up. And he gets back and he cuts that ball out. But Josh Griffiths has got an element of doubt in his head now. He's thinking, I've already been done in a 1v1. If I fuck this up again, my confidence is gone. So he doesn't know what to do. I always say, if you're going to go, you've got to go. And you've got to clear the ball. And you've got to take the player. You've got to go all in. But he had that element of doubt going, do I commit? And he kind of went half down and half up. And he's like, because he's unsure. For me, you've got to have a goalkeeper coach who's been and lived and breathed those situations over a 20-year career.
Do you think part of the scenario with Griffiths is that because of the way we defend from the front, certainly in the second half when we're looking to go out and win the game, shots on goal against Pompey is basically avoiding the issue? Because ultimately, in the second half, the way we press and the way we want to get out at players and get out at the opposition, certainly the back line, it's almost in a way that we don't have to rely on Griffiths. The idea in the second half is to press so intensely,
yeah,
Griffiths doesn't have to touch the ball because it's never going to make it close enough to him. It's like when we won League Two. The amount of times we turn the ball over in midfield, David Ford may as well have got a season ticket in the, yeah, Milton end, which I know some fans really want. But but I can understand, certainly for that Ogilvy block on the line. Yeah, I can see the element of doubt in Griffith's head. Ogilvy deserves a huge shout out for that. What I would say is my three main takeaways from that game in general. Number one, I think yesterday was an example where the team, and I don't just mean the 11, I mean the sideline, the team needs to recognise the direction of the wind. I know you've got a plan, and I know it's a bloody good plan because we're joint top. But when you've emptied that much of the tank in the first half only to get a 1-0 lead, you've got to recognise that Plymouth are like us in a way. They're a second half team. They were clearly a good side. Clearly their best was yet to come. And when the tempo started to shift, you can't have everyone pressing forward. At some point, you've got to be able to tell the players, you're in for a rubbish 10-15 minutes here. You're in for, you know, this is Plymouth assaulting you now, because this is where they really use everything they've got to get back into the game, like we would in the second half when we're chasing game. I would like to have seen us, and I know I'll get stick for this, I would like to have seen us go back into our shell for a bit, for at least 10-15 minutes and go, you've got to soak this up, lads, because this is a good Plymouth side that's earned their way here on merit, because they've beaten teams like Derby away from home, and they've won four at home from four. This is Plymouth's siege on the Pompey goal now. For 10-15 minutes, sit off and hold off. And if you can do that, you've earned the right to win. But as it relates to the Plymouth first goal and the Plymouth second goal, we haven't fully retreated, but we haven't fully pressed either, which is certainly why for the second goal, that they go straight through the middle bank, and that ball goes straight through the back line. Ennis is obviously going to be Ogilvy in a foot race one-on-one, and that's why we look so stretched. To me, it's not a big concern, because again, we're joint top. Even with the way we dropped 2 points and then gained a point yesterday, it's still a fantastic start. But it's one occasion where I think you've got to know when the wind changes. You've got to be able to adapt to game circumstances where they come out of your favour.
I'm just going to bring this up because me and Jeff made a bet before you came in at how you would describe Josh Caroma's goal. And I think we both agreed on the same thing. How would you describe Josh Caroma's goal on Saturday?
We haven't even discussed it yet. So you know, it's this breaking
Josh Caroma's goal.
Yes. How did it look?
What, the actual strike in itself?
How did it look to you?
What's that?
How did it look to you that, you know?
It looked to me like. Clarify. What, the actual strike itself?
No. How would you describe the goal?
I'd describe the goal as him baiting the defender
bollocks.
Out.
Liam went for aesthetically pleasing.
No, I'd describe it as him baiting the defender out, because he comes out to intercept. Caroma just drops off, takes the ball. He eyes up the goalkeeper and just sends a Mr. Whippy over the top of him.
No, we were hoping for Thunderfuck or something like that.
It's not a Thunder Bastard, because he opens up his body.
He sends
a Mr. Whippy over the top of him.
It's a lovely finish, and it's the move as well,
because that fullback, well, he's not a fullback, he's the outside centre back. Oh, it's a lovely little bait out, and
damn
it gives Caroma the freedom of the corner of the box.
It was the touch, wasn't it?
It was,
I was determined we were going to get
it. It was just like that first touch, and as soon as that was like. I actually thought it went over at first. I thought it'd gone over the crossbar and hit the top of the net. And I was just like, what a goal. What an absolute goal.
Yeah, great finish. And can I also, when we're talking about Colby Bishop, didn't score yesterday, obviously. But what I do...
He should have.
Yeah.
That header in the first half from Dale. And this is, again, like, we emptied way too much of the tank not to go in multiple goals ahead. Yeah.
Listen, Colby Bishop misses that header. 9 times out of 10, that's it in the back of the net.
Yeah. But imagine the game scores.
Dane Scarlett, through on goal, running from about 35 yards out, running through. And it's great he's got that that attitude and like single-mindedness to go, do you know what? I'm going to drive at goal, I'm going to take this on. But if he just looked up, Owen Dell was free. There's another glorious
chance. I will credit Ballymumba, though, for his back, the backtracking run to get back and catch Scarlett. Not only catch him, it was a great tackle as well. You know, I will give him credit for that,
The ragged flick. I don't think the whole of the ball was over the line, but it was definitely handball.
Oh, mate, that was over the line.
There was a definite handball in there.
Definite handball.
Yeah.
It's a definite handball. So it's these fine margins. It is these fine margins. And, you know, like I said, we should have been 2-3 up at going in at half time. That game should have been home and dry.
I apologise if this is one of your third eyes, but what I will give Colby Bishop credit for is the shithousery shushing of Pie Face in the Plymouth end. I mean, I'm just guessing Pie Face is there. I know he wasn't.
Yeah, it was
there,
a good moment, wasn't
it? It was. Was that one of your third eyes? Shit, sorry.
That's all I've got loads.
Hey.
That was another one of my takeaways, is that a lot of people were saying last year's Pompey don't get a point in that game. Well, we did. Last year, we were 1-0 up at half-time at home to Plymouth. Two quick via breakaway goals from Plymouth make it 2-1 before we equalise in stoppage time from an unlikely goal scorer. That is how it played out.
If you looked on, because obviously I was all over social media on Saturday, obviously following updates, watching clips and stuff. You can see the reaction from Plymouth fans as well. They even said we should have won that game, and they were lucky to get.
I saw one extraordinary comment,
which is rare from Plymouth fans.
It was from the League One Twitter account earlier, and it's Portsmouth 9 unbeaten. And there was this Plymouth fan who commented. I haven't got the exact comment on my phone, but it was essentially on the lines of, "Pompey were extraordinarily lucky to get a point. We weren't great. We were missing a couple of players, and then we clicked for 15 minutes." Right, so Pompey didn't deserve to get a point, but you played well for, let me check my notes, 15 minutes. Right, so what was the other 75 minutes then?
You know, I was just saying that surprised me that Plymouth fans were praising us. That's what I meant. There are some deluded.
You think you deserve to win because of a good 15 minutes.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, we didn't. Now, there is a difference between deserving to win and you should have won. Pompey should have won because we got ourselves into far too many positive attacking scenarios to not score more than one goal in the first half yesterday. There's the Bishop header that goes over. There's Josh Caroma running down towards the right-hand side of the goal, and he's got the defender lined up inside, but he doesn't want to go on his left foot. So then he turns into traffic to the tune of three Plymouth centre-backs and has to go all the way across the box. You have to have some sort of left foot there to be able to open it up and just strike across goal, see what happens. Right at the end of the half, there's Owen Dale breaking through down to the byline. You've got Scarlett, who's peeled a run back towards the penalty spot, and you've got someone at the back post. That didn't even result in a shot, let alone a goal. That's where we should have had this game dead and buried. Plymouth, again, they're a good team. They're where they are on merit. We knew they were going to come at us. My concern at half-time, and I've had a weird sixth sense for this sort of thing this week. Half-time at Burton, drawing, I knew we'd win. Like, I had full belief we would win. Half-time against Plymouth, the moment that half-time whistle blew, the first thing I turned around and said to my dad was, I fear we've emptied too much of the tank to only be 1-0 up. I don't see us withstanding Plymouth second half enough to get out of here with 3 points, and we didn't. Like, I'm starting to understand the limitations of this team, because I understand why we're a one-half team, because we empty so much of the tank in one half, we can't sustain that intensity for 90 minutes. Now, again, not a problem. We're joint top. Clearly, it's working. But it was just our efficiency yesterday that cost us. And actually, I can live with that. Yeah. Because if you walk away from a game having dropped 2 points... what's the better takeaway? One, it's your own fault. Two, you were outclassed. I would rather it be our own fault we didn't win yesterday, because that means we get 2 weeks to work on it before Ipswich away, rather than say last year when we went to Plymouth and lost 1-0, I had to walk out of home park going, we were simply outclassed. We were bettered across every part of the pitch. I'm okay with walking out of Fratton Park yesterday going, the main reason we didn't win is us. And that's good, because that means we're good enough to go out and beat Plymouth. That means we're good enough to go out and beat Peterborough like we did the other week. We're not being outclassed by these teams.
Which we were.
We beat Peterborough.
We were saying, weren't we?
Yeah. It's just the fact that we didn't have that edge to beat Plymouth. Not that we weren't we're not good enough overall. We just weren't good enough on the day.
Didn't we say before these games came up, we said, we'll see how good we really are when we play teams like this. And so far, yeah, so good.
We are absolutely good enough.
We've played quite a lot. Let's say the top 10. We've beaten, well, we've drawn Plymouth, we've drawn Sheffield, we've drawn Lincoln, we've beaten Cambridge, beaten Peterborough. The only teams in the top 10 we haven't played are Ipswich, Barnsley, Bolton and Derby. Now, yes, okay, we've got a 2-week break. At 75 minutes, 80 minutes, we were looking at the scenario where after 2 weeks, we could be fourth.
We could. Because there was one point yesterday, we're 2-1 down to Plymouth, and Ipswich are leading at Sheffield Wednesday.
You know, we're now in the scenario where if results go our way, we could still be second.
Do you know what game is taking place next weekend?
Yes.
Ipswich versus Plymouth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was it. Cause, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, how brilliant is that for us? We get to sit back. I mean, a lot of fans are saying they still haven't had a game officially called off. As of yesterday when I checked, we're still the only game officially off in League One. I expect it to be more. But if that game goes ahead, that's a great day for us.
Yeah.
Because no matter which way, we get something positive out of it.
We do.
Who are you supporting that day?
We do. Yeah. We're either third on 21 points and Ipswich would be second.
Yeah.
And Plymouth would be on 22. Ipswich, Plymouth draw. Well, okay, we're still second. And Ipswich are 1 point ahead of us. And Plymouth are 1 point behind us.
Yeah. And I can...
Or Ipswich win, and they're 3 points ahead of us, and Plymouth are still, you know...
Behind us.
So what are we singing then? Green Army.
Green Army. Ooh, 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 ooh. That's why I got a cider today, to be honest. But I can be annoyed in the manner that we dropped 2 points yesterday. And Cowley said the same in his interview. Like, the players went back to the dressing room, and they weren't in a party mood because they scored a 94th-minute equaliser. They realised that they'd got away with one there, really, to get away with a point. But I can also be very relieved that that what is a good team that has made a great start to the season has found a way to stay unbeaten. That's a great morale boost because, yes, you've dropped 2 points in a manner of speaking, but you found a way in a second half in which you were pretty much non-existent compared to Plymouth to still grab a point. And at the same time, the league leaders have dropped a 2-goal lead at Sheffield Wednesday. Now, if people want to say that they're miles at Ipswich are miles ahead of us. Okay, you've done the same thing at Hillsborough that we did. You had a score draw, and you didn't score the last goal of the game.
And they haven't played. They haven't played many of the teams in the top 10.
No. So what could have been a very poor afternoon around the 80th minute has turned into an afternoon that I left Fratton Park going, it's not been great, but I would have taken it before kickoff.
One thing I'm enjoying so far, lads, is the fact that we are the top scorers in the league. 9 games in, 19 goals scored. I mean, we've been shy of goals over the last couple of seasons, haven't we? But we're doing all right. And another positive I want to take from yesterday.
Another cross as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the goals
coming from everywhere. Like,
two crosses midweek, a cross yesterday.
We haven't even talked about the equaliser.
I'm just about to say, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's brilliantly worked. It really is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Michael Morrison, you know, you wouldn't expect someone like that to go down, but it's an innocuous shove, and he's just gone. You know what? You're in and around my face. I'm going down. I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah.
Teams would do that to us.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen some tweets from Plymouth fans saying, oh, you know, it's unsporting behaviour, whatever. Don't put your hands up. Don't give the referee a decision to make.
So, yeah. Plymouth fans that have said that, you're telling me that if that happened to one of your players, you wouldn't have the same reaction? Of course you wouldn't. Bullshit. But yeah, Hackett.
Also, is it entirely relevant?
No.
Was Brendan Galloway marking Rico Hackett before he got sent off? No.
No.
He was marking Michael Morrison, which is why he's pushed Morrison to the ground. Whoever was marking Hackett was still on the pitch and therefore not marking Hackett.
Hackett started that run from just outside the penalty spot. Now, it's helped. The sending off has helped us because it means Morrell isn't being marked. They're all expecting, you know, Marlon Pack to launch it into the box. A bit like Burton for the first one.
Yeah.
You know, he's done that short throw-in instead. Morrell has taken a touch. And I think this is where it helps Pompey, because they're expecting that ball to come in first time, and Morel's just been cute enough to go, I'm going to take a touch and enter into the 18-yard box. I'm going to make you come out to me. Now, two players have instinctively gone, we need to go close him down. They haven't looked around and gone, oh, he's going, I'm going to stay with my man. The whole Plymouth defence have shifted because two of them have gone out to close Morel down. And he's just curled that ball in. He's put it into the danger area. And Hackett, you know, if it wasn't Hackett, it would have been Clark Robertson.
Yeah. There are players lining up for that. And I think Morel deserves a lot of credit for that because he's not played much football at all this season. His toughest run out before that was crawling in the pot. To have the composure of mind to pick up that ball in the 94th minute with a bang Fratton Park at his back to just guide that onto the head of Hackett. Yeah, welcome back, Joe. Yeah. You've done all right there.
And he had a painkiller injection midweek as well
And for Hackett to get that goal at Fratton in front of his kid in the first game, his kid gone. Yeah. Great, yeah, fantastic. He gets a bit of criticism here and there. I think we could all
look. We've
see
said
that.
He's got a great left foot. In
yeah,
him. We've said he's got a great left foot.
Two.
Yeah.
Well, I think our usual tagline for Hackett is: there is absolutely a place in this squad for him.
Absolutely.
There is absolutely a place. In
I
a
really
good
like him.
Pommy squad for him, and he's come up with a huge point, a huge goal that gets us a huge point that keeps us unbeaten. There you go.
I said it at the start of the season. If anyone can get the best out of him, it's Danny Cowley. And so far, so good. I reckon it was Cowley that messaged Jeff for his analysis of the goal.
On that note, there was a nice quote from Morel yesterday. I think it was on the to the tune of, if I'm on an open top parade bus in May, I don't care about missing the first six games of the season.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, go on, lads.
That just shows you the squad unity and the bond they've got now, isn't it?
It does, yeah.
But obviously, I wasn't there. I was away. But can I just give credit to... I know.
Where were you?
I mean, you haven't said you're a football coach, Jeff, but, you know.
I'm surprised Jeff is here tonight. I mean, not whoring himself out somewhere.
Should we talk about that in a minute? But can I just give you everyone credit for their participation in the national anthem? Because from an outsider, it gave me chills hearing that. It was well observed.
I have a bit of a third eye on that, which we'll get to in a bit about the national anthem. Yeah,
Let's talk about Jeff. I know this is completely irrelevant to the podcast, but if I'm honest, we're 35 minutes in, we've pretty much covered everything apart from the upcoming game. But Jeff, you've been called up. Go on,
getting his next
kit out.
Yeah,
I can hear him aching already.
Yeah, so over the last few weeks, my daughter's doing really well at hockey. She's gone to Solent area trials. She's doing really good in goal. And I just got chatting to the goalkeeping coaches and the other goalkeepers there. Obviously, they found out I played in goal at hockey. And 7 years after saying I was never playing hockey again, I'm out of retirement on Saturday playing for Portsmouth in goal.
Should we go and watch him?
It's like Lethal Weapon, isn't it? I'm getting too old for this shit.
One of my mates in the army said I've made more comebacks than Rocky films.
Well, when's that?
Next Saturday.
Wow. Which means next Sunday is going to be an extraordinary.
We are live from QA Hospital.
Yeah.
Jeff's going to sound like a Bet365 advert. Good evening.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be...
So Amanda said to me, you can play, just, you know, don't get injured or whatever. That's code for don't come to me for sympathy when you're hurting.
Season.
Don't get injured or whatever.
Season 2, episode 10.
Not good luck.
We come to you this week for the physio room. Jeff is in absolute bits. That's going to be interesting. We'll have to get you an update.
It's not an easy game either. Yeah. It's against Havant, you know, and Havant have got some, or used to have some good players. They've still got some good players. But obviously I'm playing Masters hockey now. So all those ex-England internationals are playing in the over-40s team and everything else. So, yeah, and what a comeback game to be playing in.
So if you fancy a laugh, pop down on Saturday.
Yeah,
Jeff
yeah.
saw Jake Smith headbutt the planet Earth at high speed and went, hold my beer.
Jake's going to come in with two black eyes, isn't he? Did you see what happened to Jake? He hasn't mentioned it, by the way. Well, I forgot we've got to mention Jake.
Well, I took Jake to Burton on Tuesday. He's healing pretty well, actually.
Yeah,
I'll give him that.
He had surgery,
he's got some
he?
Rather good regenerative skin on him. He's had... The thing about his nose is brilliant. So on the Friday night before the Peterborough game, he went, I'm absolutely fine. I've just got a few cuts and bruises, nothing wearing a swollen eye socket, but I'll be fine. Monday morning, I've got a broken nose, but all they have to do is literally nudge it slightly, it'll be absolutely fine. Tuesday morning, I need surgery on it. Like, yeah. What kind of Benjamin Button bullshit is this? He got worse as the week went on.
Good old Jake.
That'll be me Sunday. I said to Liam earlier, I said, but the thing is, my mind is still in that headspace where I can pull off that save. And he's going, but my body.
That's brilliant.
Started breaking out R. Kelly. You know
every
I mean?
Tendon in your shoulder.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Probably should mention R. Kelly. But anyway. Fucking hell, what's this going? Should we go on to our features?
Yes, let's get into it.
Who wants to go first? Should we go Jeff third? I've already given a one away. I'll do you first, Jeff.
Well, look, there's been some quality third eyes in the last two games. And, you know, if you've got access to, the iFollow, but you see this in all of their highlights from the Burton game, is when Burton have an attack and it gets cut out and the ball pops out to Curtis and Curtis gets a free kick just outside the centre circle, go and watch the highlights and then look at the top of the screen. The Burton mascot is going absolutely mental.
He's throwing
his arms up. He's walking off in disgust. Turning round. He's having a go at the lines and the ref. Everyone, honestly.
I can even see out of that bloody thing.
It's an absolute corker. When I saw it, I was like, did I just see?
He was a great watch during the game because every decision, he was like a regular fan, except in a big polystyrene outfit, going absolutely mad. I definitely heard it. You fucking useless!
It was like, you know, the...
And he's in front of like the family section as well.
Yeah. So I was watching an iFollow and when I'm watching iFollow, I like to listen to the away, the opposite team's commentary.
Oh, some of them are deluded, aren't they?
Oh, honestly. But I missed the first 35 minutes of the first half because I was at hockey with my daughter, and I literally got in. Reese had iFollow on, and I got in. He was like, "Oh, Portsmouth players on the floor again." Oh, and guess who it is? And without even walking into the living room, I went, "But it's Curtis." Oh yeah, it's Curtis again. So you know the commentary team were just. They were just like, oh, Ronan Curtis is throwing himself to the floor.
Well, we've heard some, obviously, going to the games. We didn't talk during the game. We just sat down in a conversation. And you can hear some of them so deluded,
by the way. Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah.
Especially the iFollow ones. Because they are fans.
There's one great one. When we went to Bristol Rovers during lockdown, we lost 3-1 there. It was the night that Sean Raggett displayed his turning speed of, you know, one of our new aircraft carriers. And the Bristol Rovers I follow guys were in front of me and going, that Williams, is that the one from Exeter?
Bristol,
and in my
yeah.
head and going, no, that's Ryan Williams. The Williams you're on about is Randall Williams, who's a different skin colour and still at Exeter. But good try.
Yeah,
I think they literally hired a couple of university students for that game, didn't they?
I think, and not to ride his coattails too much, because he gets a lot of praise, I think it shows how fortunate we are to have the commentary team that we do.
Yeah.
Because you listen to Andy Mooney, and he's certainly not leaning on one side. He has the ability to be impartial on both sides, as does Guy and anyone else who stepped in. Whereas you listen to the iFollow of like Burton, or I remember Rochdale when we went there, Bristol Rovers, you think, you are just fans with microphones.
Bristol Rovers are a podcast, aren't they?
You are,
podcast.
Yeah. You sound like three lads in the pub.
That'd be a good idea, wouldn't it?
If you're fans... That's a good idea. If you're fans of that club, it must be great to listen to.
Yeah.
But as an actual commentary... Like, you still have to be objective. Like, is that
why you two are here?
You're not helping our cause here. You're one of the
but
arguments.
Even when me and Liam were on a certain media, you know, wave band.
I thought you knew you said mediocre then.
I was pretty mediocre, yeah. But I think we still offered at least an objective outlook on a match. Like, yes. If we weren't good enough, we would say we weren't good enough. But when you listen to the other ones, it's like, this is disgraceful. They're rubbish.
Yeah. And then the last one from the Burton game. I didn't realise we had a new player and it had gone unnoticed. So apparently we've got a guy called Tom Lavery who plays in midfield.
Lavery?
Yeah. I was like, who's this Tom Lavery? every time now we got the ball, it's like Lavery on the ball. So
if we're going down, if we're going down that route of getting players' names wrong, my favourite one is, I can't remember for the life of me which one it was. I want to say Gillingham away when we won 2-0 and Michael Jacobs scored a lovely, lovely first goal. I don't know why that random info is in my head. I'm pretty sure it's the Gillingham I follow said Haji Monga.
My dad, right, he doesn't listen, so I can say what I want. He is awful at pronouncing. I think he says that as well.
Having said that, Jeff
Manogo.
Who is our number one goalkeeper?
Josh Griffiths.
Who's our number two goalkeeper?
Josh Oluemi.
Oh! Oh no! It didn't work. I've been hoodwinked.
I've been practicing that.
He's in the mirror every morning for half an hour.
I was expecting him to say that one.
That's him between the hockey sticks next week with his arms wide going, Oliver Yamey.
That's a bit nutmegged.
That backfired massively.
I will give you my match analysis from. I'll get Amanda to record the match analysis of my comeback game.
What we could do for match analysis next week is just point to various bruises on your body. Can you describe that one? Right, and now that one.
Do you know what I think we should do, genuinely? I think we should mic him up.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
I'll see if I can fix something up. I did that one. I mic'd myself up when I did the spinner crab sale. I did it.
No.
Hello. Yes. We are.
Yes.
Brilliant. I'm still 18 in it.
I mic'd myself up for the Spinnaker Tower abseil.
All right.
For the radio, yes. Oh, the radio. Do you know what? People keep coming up to me saying, did you used to be on the radio? No, stop that now. It's boring. I mic'd myself up and I was so petrified I completely forgot to talk the whole way down. So all you could hear, I'd bleep the whole thing out. Shit. Oh my God. Shit. Oh my God. That's what you could hear. But I can't use that. But we'll try and mic you up. That'd be great.
Yeah. So Plymouth Third Eyes. I've got several, but this is my favourite. I spotted Marlon Pack's partner and children in the south stand. I spotted that because they had Daddy number 7 on the back, and with the family of all the other Pompey players. I thought, that's lovely, you know what I mean? Wearing the shirt. And then 10 minutes later, one of them was in a full George the Dinosaur onesie. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. All I could see was this, like, 3-foot dinosaur in the south stand going up and down. Absolutely
superb. I know, Kenny Jackett was back.
Oh, no.
And then, obviously, when Hackett scored, he went to take his shirt off, but he realised he was already booked. So he's trying to get his shirt off, and he was like, oh, shit, no. I'll keep it on.
And he was a very smart man for it.
But at the same time, as you mentioned earlier, Colby Bishop was cupping his ears and shushing the Plymouth fans. But what happened after that? It kind of, no one really noticed. Joe Morrell, for some reason, ran towards,
this was weird.
He did a Nathan
towards
Thompson.
Cooper and got taken out.
Cooper sent him into the shadow realm.
He did a Nathan Thompson, didn't he, with the old, when he, what's his name, missed that penalty.
It was against Oxford, wasn't it?
Yeah, Alex something.
Do you know what?
The penalty, yeah.
The third die of that third die is that Plymouth fans couldn't even agree on what happened. Half the Plymouth fans were saying Cooper's absolutely flattened him there, and the other half were going, what's he diving for?
Yeah.
What?
So, and then we had Cooper in the first half. The ball got thrown back to him from the fat end, and he punched it out into the air. It's like, that's what you get for time wasting. You end up with a 94th minute equaliser going in the Milton end. Unlucky.
Yeah.
And then the last one, and I never saw this in any of the highlights or the full match replay that you can get on iFollow, until a guy called Kev Pocock posted on Twitter that he's aching from what happened at the Hackett goal celebration. Now go find Kev Pocock on Twitter, because what you see in the 94th minute is him running down the north stand, right where the Plymouth fans are, and then falling over the advertising hoarding and having to be picked up by two stewards. So Kev, you win the third eye this week just for that comedy value, because he kind of gets bundled and he's like, oh shit, I'm on the pitch.
Do you know what though, I will say, of all the goals we scored that season, that is one of the goals that goes in the top 5 celebrations so far. Everyone was going mental for it. I know we didn't win, I know we dropped 2 points, but I think it was just
The fact felt like a win, didn't it?
We've done it to Plymouth again, and we've also stayed unbeaten. It was just a...
There's certain things in life. Death, taxes, drawing two all with Plymouth. Yeah, at
did you, four of the last five.
You missed a third eye.
Ivo?
Yeah. What do Plymouth do when they're disallowed goal winning?
Oh, yeah.
Wasting your only flair on a disallowed goal, especially when later in the game you would go 2-1 up.
Idiots.
My contributions to third eye. Number one, I won't even begrudgingly admit it. When Plymouth come down to Fratton Park and they score, it looks class in that away. And of all the teams that come down here and get limsy in the away and when they score, Plymouth does look tasty when they score. Do you know what? I do hate to admit it, but I will. When they score, it looks
even at home, they are quite loud.
Yeah. But they are among the sing-when-you-winning teams. Because when they are winning... Again, they are very loud. Like at home park, when they took the lead 1-0 in the second half against us, the volume was amazing. And they were quite loud when they went 2-1 up against us. But they were absolutely not. They seemed like a team of, you know, either end, the extreme ends of the spectrum, where it's either nothing or everything with their fan base. But it did look tasty. My other third eye comes from the anthems, which I mentioned earlier. The anthem at Fratton Park was beautifully in sync between all four stands. The anthem at the Pirelli Stadium on Tuesday, less so. It was unhinged chaos trying to sing that thing, because I will tell you what happened at the end of that anthem. God save the king, king, king. There were four different versions of the anthem being sung, and I'm trying to sing one of them, and I'm also trying to listen over the four different versions of God Save the King to the one that's the actual anthem being played on the tannoy, and I couldn't get any rhythm of it at all. It was chaos at Pirelli, but at Fratton Park, absolutely glorious rendition of it.
Yeah, and at least for me, we sung the right version.
Yes,
it has to be.
Yes,
king.
I know you made that point on Twitter last week, but yes, the correct version was sung.
Shall we end on your feature? We've got about 10 minutes till we're going to observe a minute silence, so we'll try and squeeze it in if we can.
Obviously, we didn't have a pod last week, so I'm never sure when we do skip a pod whether I should do some retrospective dub of the week type thing. I'll do it for dinner of the week. It's going to be a joint award between Liverpool fans and Trev Sinclair. Sinclair gets dinner of the week for being...
A din.
A complete din. His social media strategy is to take a very unnecessary shot at the passing of an old woman, then apologise, then play the mental health card, then go straight back into taking shots. I'm not sure that's the best strategy in the world, but it's his freedom, and he can face whatever consequences as a result. Liverpool fans can be a good contender for dinner of the week or joint dinner of the week, because they are not trusted to behave themselves to not scream down the national anthem for what would have been that, which
I'm
is apparently one of the reasons why
100%.
The weekend's games were called off, because 100%. The Liverpool fans would not be able to be trusted in the event of the national anthem being played at Anfield.
And there's a reason for that. And the genuine Liverpool fans, I say from Liverpool, are not savvy enough to realise, like I would say, Over 55% of their fan base in Anfield come from Ireland, and they get the ferry across and they come from Ireland. That is why we get this, we're not English, we're Scouse, we don't respect the quit. It's bollocks. It's because the Irish contingent, who also support Celtic, are in that fan base. And that's why the good Liverpool fans get brainwashed and tarnished with the shit of those, I was going to say, a word that I have not used since I was in Belfast in 98, but I won't, of those Irish fans that obviously don't want Northern Ireland to exist.
Rather foreboding from Jeff, as Celtic will feature a little bit later in the podcast. Dub of the week, I genuinely, I don't think I have one. I just don't think I have one.
You could give it to St Mirren for beating Celtic.
Oh, actually, no. Was Curtis's child born last week?
Yes.
That case, Ronan Curtis and his good lady and their child can have top of the week. yeah, we'll give to Curtis or the Curtis family. That's Dub of the Week sorted and Dinner of the Week sorted for last week. This week, some honourable mentions to last week as well. Max Swatton, the Pompey social media admin, for putting out a post the night we had that huge storm in Portsmouth, and he tweeted the image of Cowley in bed with the "Don't go to bed yet, Pompey fans." He then tweeted everyone in Portsmouth right now as a reference to the fact that no one could sleep because the storm was so loud. What it did set off was a wild flurry of Pompey activity, thinking, holy shit, have we signed someone after the transfer window? The tweet went down in about 3 minutes, but that was not soon enough for Pompey fans to jump on it, and Max Swatton was
we know Max well, and he was just like, for fuck's sake.
Let's think. Ah, yes, another contender from last week was an Ipswich fan thinking that Portsmouth has a population of 1.5 million, like we're Birmingham or something.
I caught a large proportion of those Ipswich fans on one of my tweets.
What he's actually done is he's Googled Portsmouth, gone onto the wiki and noticed that there is a metropolitan population of 1.5 million. What he doesn't understand, because he's a fucking idiot, is that metro population accounts for basically the urban conglomeration around the city itself.
The big word.
But the unique thing about Portsmouth is there is an unbroken line of civilization between Portsmouth and Southampton, because it goes Portsmouth to Portchester to Fareham to Whiteley to Swanwick to Hedgend to Botley, all the way through to Scum. That is the 1.5 million. So what this dickhead Ipswich fan on Twitter saying is the 200,000 so people that live in Southampton and the outlying areas counts as part of Portsmouth. The population of Hampshire is like 1.6 million.
Yeah.
And he thinks all of them live on Portsea Island. The din. Anyway, moving on to this week.
Well, the entire population of Ipswich live on one farm.
Yeah. They all have the same surname. Yeah. Moving on to this week. I think I'm probably going to have to give Dinner of the Week. And I had struggled for a good contender. Dinner of the Week actually came to my head about 3-4 hours ago. Celtic played St Mirren today. There was a minute's applause before the kickoff.
Fucking idiot.
And Celtic fans, and I will have to say it because I need to give context for it, the minute's applause before kickoff, they were singing, "If you hate the royal family, clap your hands."
During the applause.
During the minute's applause. So it looks like everyone's doing the thing. Yay! So Celtic, who just don't seem to have any... Whatever, I'll move on from that. Celtic fans who started the game singing "If you hate the royal family, clap your hands," then go and lose 2-0 to St Mirren. You're not clapping anymore, are you?
Can I add something to this? If you add the goal times up, O'Hara scored on the 43rd minute. 43rd. Oyunga scored on the 53rd minute. 50. What's that add up to?
96.
How old was the Queen?
So while Celtic fans were wildly applauding at the start of the game, I don't think they were at the end.
Yeah, idiots. Absolute idiots. All that's do is be just shut up for a minute.
I fucking hate Celtic.
Yeah,
fans.
There you go.
Dub of the week. Then moving on. Oscar Woodley deserves a huge shout out. For those who don't know, Oscar Woodley was a young fan at Burton on Tuesday night in the seated section on the side for Pompey. The ball boys of Burton would not give the Pompey players the towel to dry the ball. This seems rather unsporting, but it's what they did. So one of the times that Pack got the ball for a throw-in, and he somehow ended up with a towel as well, instead of giving it back to the Burton ball boy, he gave it to the young Pompey fan instead, Oscar Woodley. Then Oscar Woodley gives him the towel to dry it off to take the long throw-in, and from that throw-in results the winning goal to make it 1-0. Pack then goes over to celebrate with Oscar Woodley, and a good time was had by all. So Oscar didn't realise he was starting on Tuesday night, but what a contribution you made anyway, and thanks for help getting us the 3 points.
Definitely.
Brilliant little bit of wholesome content there, say.
Indeed.
Not Dub of the Week, though, because I am a soppy little git, but we'll move on to that in a second. Conor Ogilvie deserves a shout-out for Dub of the Week for that goal-saving block that stops it from being 3-1. And Dub of the Week will go to Rico Hackett because he's come off the bench, he has scored a last-minute equaliser, at Fratton Park that keeps us unbeaten. It's the first time his boy seen him at a Pompey game, and the first time his boy sees him at a Pompey game, he scores a last-minute goal in front of 17,000 Pompey fans, and I fucking love that. So what on Rico Hackett.
Brilliant.
That, and I'm a soppy little girl. Since I've become a parent, all that stuff is...
Brilliant, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. Well done, Hackett. Brilliant to have his boy there to see him score a 94th-minute goal.
Yeah, whereas I've got the opposite on Saturday. Watch, my daughter's going to be watching me from the stands, yeah, mocking me when I'm aching.
Just going to see you aching.
For everyone listening, we're going to take a moment now to remember Her Majesty the Queen, who was sadly lost last week, as I'm sure you're all aware. And we're going to take a moment now just to remember our late Majesty the Queen, Elizabeth II. Lads, I think we're gonna wrap up. We're gonna do a Twitter Spaces, aren't we? Ahead of the Ipswich game, because otherwise, there's no point.
I don't think there's a Tuesday game before Ipswich, so that is our next game.
It's probably the shortest podcast we ever.
We'd only have Ipswich and any third eye or dubbed in that Jeff and I may be able to muster up in the meantime. So,
as a promise, though, for our listeners, I will come up with some unusual facts, more about baby pigeons, you know. Is a non-stick pan a non-stick pan? How do you get a coat into a non-stick pan? Is a laptop a laptop when it's on the table?
You know. For God's sake.
If a Curtis falls in a penalty box but no one's around to hear it.
Yeah.
Did Morel get taken out? But we'll get an update on your hockey game as well. But good luck to that with that, mate. We look forward to hearing and seeing the updates.
I'm actually quite nervous because I'm kind of now in the headspace of... what have I done?
Yeah. I mean, there is a real possibility that Jeff's just not available Sunday night.
Yeah. Listen. When I've played hockey, and I played hockey at a high level, the injuries I've had are two broken ankles, two broken wrists, a broken cheekbone, a fractured wisdom teeth and a jaw, a broken nose, a fractured kneecap, torn ACL, torn cartilage, another torn cartilage, a torn cartilage in my left knee because I win my right knee. So Saturday's going to go well.
Do you know what he sounded like then? He sounded like Smithfield or in his curry. Lamb booner, chicken booner.
Yeah, listen, right.
Torn cartilage.
I've done 9 operational tours, right? I've been shot up, blown up, everything. The worst I ever got on an operational tour was the flu in Iraq. How do you get the flu in Iraq in 55 degrees?
That's brilliant, by the way.
All right. When I played hockey for the army, I fractured every bone in my body.
See, that's what I'm on about. Like, Jeff may not be available next week if he rocks up with a fractured cheekbone. I can't imagine half of Jeff's face hanging off going, yeah, Connor Chaplin's a danger. Like, Jeff, go and get some rest, mate.
Yeah, I won't do a Jake Smith.
Yeah, I was going to say, not Jake Smith. But lads...
I've got that much padding around my cheekbones now, and nothing will fracture
it,
mate.
It's built up over time, yeah. I've always wondered what the hockey ball-sized indents in your shins were.
But again, lads, thank you for your company, and thanks to the guys here at the Rose in June, and well done to everyone here for observing that minute silence as well. Absolutely beautiful moment. And yeah, once again, thank you for listening, Pompey fans. Another good week. Big shout out to Danny Cowley, keep up the good work, and Nicky and everyone at the club, because I mean, everyone's buzzing at the moment, aren't they? It's great. It really is great.
joint top going into what could in 2 weeks' time be first versus second. It's brilliant. It's a good time.
I'm actually taking Reece to Ipswich away.
Woo-hoo!
So yeah, it's going to be a great away day.
Indeed. But yeah, lads.
And I've read from the Ipswich side. Sorry, Liam.
I just want to fucking go home, mate, if I'm honest.
I thought we were doing an Ipswich review.
Just from a stadium point of view, I read
I
earlier.
I said bye like three times.
There are only 42 tickets left in the stadium.
Yeah.
So we could be looking at 29, 30,000. Let's get into it. Let's get into it.
It's going to be a great away day.
It is indeed. Can we go home now? I've got to go to work.
No, I want to talk about Burn again. Where have you been recently, Liam?
You know, Jeff's a football coach. Right. But lads, again, for the fifth time, thank you very much. And thank you, Pompey fans, for listening.
One last thing.
Fuck off to three lads in the pub. See you later. Play at Pompey.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.